Blog Talk Radio.
Turn my speakers off. Maybe that's why. I am experimenting with Skype. And there's still an echo. Every time I say something, I hear it back.
What?
Can't you hear that, Jerry? Do you hear an echo?
No.
Oh.
You need to get on with it, man. You're losing your audience. You've
I'm
got
already-
about 60 seconds.
I'm calling with Skype. Everything's an echo. I can hear you twice as well.
My contract stipulates that if you're incapacitated for any reason, I'm to take over. So
Jerry,
with that, Jerry, I've got a few topics in mind.
Jerry, it wasn't the, it's not the Skype because it started before when she came on. She said it twice. I heard her say it's Blog Talk Radio, and then she said it again. What's happening to Twitter people? Can you tell me, is there an echo? Gerald Disco?
No, you sound fine, man. You're just go, man.
Well, okay, I'm just going to, okay, but I'm hearing like all kinds of voices like I'm a schizophrenic. They're just floating out there. Anyway, here's what I wanted to talk about. I was reading the Twitter postings from the HRO Today conference in Europe. And one guy said, today we value the language of contracts over the ethics of relationships. We value the language of contracts over the ethics of relationships. And I have to tell you, I almost puked. I almost puked when I read that. It's the same old thing over and over again. Things were better in the old days. People were nicer. We didn't have to lock our doors and blah, 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 blah. Blah, blah, blah. But you know, the other day, I was reading the Bible. I was reading the Bible. And you remember Abraham? He lived a long time ago. A long time. And when his wife died, he wanted to find a place to bury her. He was living in the land of the Hittites. The Hittites. So he said to them, look, I wasn't born here, so I don't have any property. So could you sell me a plot so I can bury my wife? And they said, Abe, we like you. We're going to give you some land. And he said, no, I want to buy it. I want to buy that cave over at Ephron's place. And Ephron was there in the crowd. So he said, Abe, look, what's 400 shekels between friends? I'm going to give you that cave. And Abraham said, 400 shekels? That's sold. That's sold. I'm buying that. You see, he didn't want to accept the land as a gift, because it wouldn't really be his then. It wouldn't be his. I'm fighting these voices. I'm sorry. I'm so disoriented. Anyway, he figured if they gave it to him and he went away, they might take it back. Or if he died, they might take it back and, I don't know, dig up his wife. He wanted a deed. He wanted a contract. And that's in the Bible, the book of Genesis. It was a long time ago. So contracts have been more valuable than relationships for a very long time. So don't you believe the blarney you hear from recruiters and people in HR at these conferences, even if you hear them on Jerry, what show is this?
The Recruiting Animal Show! Recruiting Animal Show with the rock and roll intro and the fantastic
scream
guy.
I was hearing double everything.
Double everything.
It seems to have gone away now. Nope, there I am talking to myself. There's about a 5-second delay, and I hear everything double. Now I know what it's like to be a schizophrenic. You hear voices floating around.
Man, I don't know if I can be a party to this.
Well, I'm going to have to hang up soon and call back.
What do you want me to talk about while you do? Who's our guest?
Okay, well, our guest is actually, I didn't think he was going to show, but he's going to show.
Going to show or did show?
He's a guy named David Smook.
David Smook.
Smooke from Smart Recruiters. Now, he was supposed to be on a couple of weeks ago. I canceled, and 2 weeks in a row. And then I started saying, you're going to be on this week, and he didn't answer my tweet. So at the last minute, he said he was going to show up, and neither of us prepared. So, I picked up the topic. We can have a general discussion. He's here. If he wants to participate, that's good for him. So, Dave Smook, are you here?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Not really well.
What's going on, animal?
Can you hear him, Jerry? It sounds
good. Yep, I can hear him. He's good.
He's good. Dave, you want to tell us who you are?
I'm Dave.
Dave, you're Dave. I'll tell you who he is. He's a young punk. He's a young punk who doesn't know anything about recruiting. He's a social media enthusiast. That's what it says on his LinkedIn profile, and he's working for Smart Recruiters. Is that right, Dave? Is that a good intro for you?
Oh, geez.
Dave?
This might be your first 5-minute show, animal.
Well, I'm going to have to call back in, Jerry, because I'm hearing so many voices. I can't.
Okay, I'll take it from here. Do what you need to do.
Is this the part where we're at?
Okay.
Are you back in?
Not me. I'm going off now.
Okay.
You talk to him.
I can handle it. David.
What's going on, Jerry?
Hey, just doing what I do, man.
What do you do?
I am a headhunter, recruiter, staffing artist, as some call me, here in Indiana, middle America, doing send-outs, getting job orders, making placements. What do you do? Tell us about you.
I try and produce remarkable content around hiring.
Okay, for what purpose?
For the sake of remarkable content. Making things easier.
Okay.
Great advice should be shared.
Okay. What's your background?
My background? I studied economics and creative writing.
Okay.
I write a lot every day. I used to be a newspaper reporter. I think social networks have changed the world and the way we communicate and the way we find people, and that's why it's very relevant to recruiting today.
Have you been in recruiting then, David? Are you a recruiter?
No.
How are you able to write content about recruiting?
Interviewing people, sharing ideas that have worked for other people. You know, a cameraman's not an actor.
That's true. Yeah, I guess that's true. What's been your best article
today?
Okay, I'm back. Your
I
best content.
I realize I'm wrong. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I'll let you talk to him a bit more. But when he says he was a newspaper reporter, that was like for a few months, okay? Right, Dave? Be honest, will you?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay, and so now you work for Smart Recruiters?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Is that your full-time job?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sticking with it, animal. I'm trying to get there.
I'm getting complaints on Twitter. They're saying this is what we waited 4 weeks for. But I'll tell you what happened. I had the show page open, so I was listening. So I didn't realize I was hearing the show at the same time I had the studio page open. I just had to close one window. So I'm ready to take over. It sounds like you're dying. Okay, from Twitter.
It's not my fault, man.
No, it's not your fault, Jerry. It would never be your fault. I screwed it up, and you're trying to help me. That's all, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you want to sing? Dave, did you want to sing? I have that song ready to sing if you want. You ready?
La, 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 la.
Dave, you're as bad as your boss. He was on the show. It was
unbelievable. That was a sad day.
So here, Dave, you sit on there. You're not like a full-fledged guest today, but you're on the sidelines. You're like a co-host, okay? I'm going to refer to you every now and again. You're Jerry's number two, you're number three, okay? So I've got a bunch of topics that I put together. And here's one that I think is very important. Winter is coming now, okay? So if you have to travel to a meeting, you know, when it gets cold outside, my nose always starts running when I come back inside. So you don't want to wipe your nose on your fingers in front of someone when you're going to shake hands with them or on your sleeve. So it's always really good to carry a pack of Kleenex with you at all times. Jerry, wouldn't you agree with that? It's very important for a recruiter to know.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks. Okay, that's issue number one. Any comments on that, Dave?
I prefer a handkerchief.
You know what? You can't throw them away. It gets dirty. You just have to put it back in your pocket. Forget the hankies, okay? They're just for show. Okay, now there's something else.
Hankies are nasty.
Who's that?
Me.
Oh, is that Jerry? Okay.
It's Jerry. Speakerphone.
Oh, okay. Now, there was a guy, one of the job hunters who was on the show named John Hyland, and he posted. I thought he was a friend of the show, and I still consider him a friend of the show, but he posted that he didn't get anything out of this show. And the guy came on the show with a squirrel haircut. His hair was like 6 inches above his head. Everybody criticized him. He went out and got a haircut. Don't tell me he didn't learn anything. He got a haircut as soon as he got off the show. Right? Does anybody remember him? Can anybody hear me? It's dead.
I can hear you, and I do not remember him.
Who else is here? Anybody want to say hi?
Leek is here. Hello.
Who is it?
Hi.
Lee. Hi.
Lee Shamuel? Who else?
Chris Fleek.
Chris Fleek. Who else?
Lee Candiotti.
Lee Candiotti. Okay, I don't know you. I saw you on Twitter, and there was a girl here as well. Want to say hi?
Oh, I'm the one who's always interrupted.
Oh, girl interrupted. Kathy. Okay. Also, I have to tell you something. I helped somebody move this week, and as soon as she was moving in, it was last week, as soon as she was moving in, she had too many boxes, and the property manager told her, we're going to evict you unless when I do an inspection next week, 1 week from the moving date, that, you know, your apartment isn't a hoarder's den. So I came the next day, and I went to speak to the property manager. The guy just gave me a dirty look from the moment I came in. I said, are you angry at me? He said, yeah. He says, we don't want hoarders here. I said, you know, she just moved in. She's got a lot of boxes. She's going to throw them out. He says, we want the fire marshal. We don't want a fire trap. We're going to have an inspection. I said, look, I'm here to solve a problem, not make them. And he was just rude. He was mean. And at the end of the meeting, I, you know, shook hands with him just as a formality. And the guy, like, made it obvious that he couldn't stand the thought of shaking hands with me, although he followed through. And when I left there, I said, geez, would I ever plate the guy like that? Is there any way for me to tell if I was recruiting property managers that I had a jerk, a terrible, evil person on the phone, or would I say, oh, you know what, his references say he's a guy with backbone? I felt really bad about that because, like, I was really mad. I didn't care if this guy walked across the street and got hit by a car, quite frankly. So I'm just wondering if anybody else has that concern ever. Am I placing a good person or a bad person with my company?
Are you still talking?
That's why you ask behavioral-based questions.
So go ahead, Kathy. Tell me about that.
Jerry, you're fine. I'm going to bore everybody.
No, just, you know,
okay.
I think this is the last animal show ever, and I'm sad.
Okay, Jerry, hang up.
This is bad.
Position period. I don't care if you hang up today, okay?
No, and I might.
Luke hangs up, and I don't care if everybody hangs up, okay?
God.
It was enough for me just to get on the air. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Let's talk to David Petraeus. Would you try to play someone who had to resign from his first job, his other job, for having a sexual affair with somebody in the company? Both parties were married. It became public. Would you put somebody like that?
Well, yeah, you can.
Well,
I've seen it happen.
You've seen it happen? Tell us the story, Kathy.
I can't name the company, but it was a large company, and two of the district managers were having an affair, and they were both married, and they were both terminated, and they both successfully got other jobs.
Okay, but you didn't place them. You didn't hire them.
No.
Okay. Okay, well, I don't know. This is such a weird situation to lose a really good person because they had an affair. I think it's irrelevant to their ability.
Well, with the CIA, though, Animal, that's a little different. I mean, they can be, you know.
Okay. Anyway, I figured out a way. In fact, I remembered something I came across years ago. If you want to know someone's attitude towards having affairs at work, when you're interviewing them, you just have to say, what do you think about, do you like the bridges of Madison County? The bridges, it's about an affair. If they liked it, then, you know, there's something wrong. Anybody?
There's an echo, Animal.
I can hear it too, but I can't solve this one. I don't know what to do about these echoes, okay?
So how is this relevant to our conversation with David Smoke?
He didn't come prepared. Ask him a question. I don't know what to ask him.
You might just ask him if he's still here.
I want to ask him. David, why are you on the show today?
I'm on the show today because the Animal asked me to be on the show today.
Well, but you don't just do what anybody asks you to do, do you?
No, I mean, really what I wanted to talk about is how anyone can recruit. And,
okay, well,
you know, it's good if your sales department is the one hiring the new salespeople.
So you think anybody can recruit. So why don't you recruit Jerry to come work for your company?
Well, I couldn't. Jerry does a different thing to me. I could recruit anyone, you know, in social media and PR and marketing, but I can't recruit someone in sales or headhunting because I don't know what to ask them because I don't do sales or headhunting.
But if you can recruit anybody, then you should be able to recruit through all.
No. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I can recruit people in my field, and I think other people in their field can recruit people in their field.
So you believe then an accountant would make a good recruiter if he was looking for an accountant, even though accountants by nature are more interested in numbers and figures and facts rather than selling a story, creating interest, and closing toward the ultimate goal of the person joining the team.
I see where you're coming from. Yeah. I mean,
did I win?
To have someone,
did I win?
Have someone close.
That was easy.
It's good to have someone close.
Yeah, man.
It is.
No,
it is.
Come on.
But, I mean,
if an
accountant's going to work with that accountant, I want to make sure they can work together. And
yeah.
I wouldn't want to hire him unless they've met and unless he meets the people he's going to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And the people he's going to work with have, you know, talked about and commented on the people they're going to get. And if they, you know, agree as a group of an accountant, they should hire the next accountant.
Well, though, I think what you're talking about is interviewing, though, rather than recruiting.
Right.
Recruiting is the art of identifying, qualifying, and attracting the person your team needs. It's
a very specific
skill set.
I want to tell you, that's a great sentence. Really,
you can use that.
Good. Yeah,
you can use that if you want.
Can you say that again? I think it's worth repeating for everybody.
Just listen to the recording, okay? Here's the thing, Jerry.
Now, hold on, man. Finally, somebody takes interest in something I have to say, and you shut him down.
Go ahead.
Skip it. Now I'm reticent to speak again.
Okay. But look.
Reticent.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can use that.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I think an accountant could sell another accountant on a job better than a generalist recruiter because the accountant understands what the value of the job is, what the career potential is, much better than someone who doesn't know anything about accounting.
Stop. So the accountant is able to share information, not necessarily close, uncover the need, address the need, and move it forward. Two different things here, man.
No, not really.
Now,
Jerry,
always thought that recruiting is making sure you have all you would ever need to know about a job, pepper somebody with so much information that they're just so overwhelmed with all the data that they just take the job. That's not recruiting. That's just spewing information.
Look, an accountant could tell another accountant, this is going to be interesting because this is what we're doing here. This is fun. You don't really know what they're doing. You're just using buzzwords because you don't know anything about accounting. You're just throwing them out there and hoping the potential candidate, is going to bite.
Oh, so then you believe that telling is indeed selling.
Huh?
You never heard the phrase, hey, telling isn't selling? You've never heard that?
No, I haven't.
Well, you've been missing then.
Okay, Jerry, if you take an accounting job, you're not an accountant. You're just going to take a bunch of words that are mumbo-jumbo to you.
They're not mumbo-jumbo to me.
Client company, repeat them to the candidates, to the people you recruit, and hope they understand them enough to say, yeah, that sounds interesting.
Wrong, man. You must not know what recruiting is, man.
Doing how it relates to what they're doing at this company and saying this, he could say, this is why it's good for you, because I understand. You don't understand.
Okay, man. I'm going to change the way that I've been kicking everybody's ass for the past 25 years.
You have anything else to say there, Jer? Did I win?
No.
Hello?
I wouldn't even call that a draw.
Go on.
I won.
I can't hear anything.
Can you hear me say I won?
Oh.
Can you hear that?
Yeah. I don't know what's going on here. I can hear you now. I can hear you now.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, man. Okay. What do you think of the bridges of Madison County? Did you see it?
Me? 20 years ago.
Yeah, why is this a relevant question?
Because Daniel, it's about an affair, and if the person liked the movie, then you know that they're not really against affairs when they're married.
And maybe they just like Clint Eastwood. Meryl Streep has never been hot.
Yeah, I like Meryl Streep. I think she's very attractive.
Really?
Yes, I do.
No.
She's very pretty. And Renaissance, I mean, her complexion, peaches and cream. And
need to know his job.
Okay. Anyway.
But that's just me.
Yeah, okay. It's not me.
See, Animal, alpha males look at these things differently.
How do
so
they look?
I understand that you've got a different perspective.
Hey! Our prime minister was an alpha male, Pierre Trudeau, and he went and dated Barbara Streisand. What do you think of that? Talking about nose jobs.
She's an idiot.
She needs Jerry, to stick you surround with yourself. You surround yourself with beautiful women. I mean, I can. You do.
They gravitate toward me. I don't necessarily make a decision to surround myself with beautiful women.
If you don't take the oblique view, like the bridges of Madison County, what do you say? Have you ever cheated on your wife? Have you ever slept with anybody from work? I mean, how do you ask them about that issue?
I never talked about that with anybody.
You never played anybody at that level, I guess.
It's none of my business.
It is your business. They'll get fired if they don't fit into the culture, right?
Well, perhaps adulterers are in a better position to recruit adulterers than I am.
You're probably right.
I wouldn't know a thing about it.
And alcoholics are in a better position to recognize other alcoholics and keep them out of the company. That's right, Jerry. You finally said something correct. Dave, do you have anything to say about any of this? Have you ever cheated on your wife? Okay.
I recently saw Flight.
What'd you see?
Flight.
I don't know that movie.
You guys see this?
It's a movie with Denzel Washington where he lands a plane and he's got blood alcohol. It's over the limit, and it's a story about his perseverance through that
okay.
dilemma.
Thanks.
Were there snakes on the plane?
No.
No. I mean, but he lands a plane no one can land, but he does it drunk.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is the old performance versus values. Uh-huh. And, mm-hmm. you know, in the end, values win.
Okay. Now, talking about this stuff, emotional intelligence is very closely related to culture. And I was reading that, you know, companies, if they hire someone with the wrong culture and they don't fit, it's going to cost them anywhere between $25,000 and $50,000 to replace them. So this person was saying you have to know how to interview for emotional intelligence. And she said you can actually ask people direct questions like, when was the last time you lost your temper? And they will tell you. So you she said you should definitely include that question in your interview. Would anyone here consider? Would anyone here consider asking that question?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah,
I would.
You know,
yeah, I would. I would as well, but I'm not sure that it's a, that it's any kind of a direct measurement of exactly how emotionally mature somebody is or not.
Who's talking right now?
Lee.
Lee?
Yeah.
Lee Shmuel? No,
no.
Lee Catelli.
Who is Lee Catelli?
I don't know who Lee Catelli is. My name is Lee Candiotti.
Candiotti.
Candiotti. Candiotti, like cotton candy, Odi, right?
Correct.
Okay. So tell us a bit about yourself, Lee. Who are you? It's your first time. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I'm a recruiter. I've been a recruiter for about 30 years.
Yeah.
Specialize in marketing, direct marketing, database marketing, and digital marketing.
Mm. Uh-huh.
Do work on both the agency and client sides of the fence, mostly about 25% retainer and the rest is contingency.
Okay, we'll get to that in a second. I want to come back to this culture issue. Do you issue for culture? Is culture important to you as a recruiter?
I think it's very important, depending upon, you know, what kind of environment the company is and what, you know, whether or not your candidate is going to fit within that culture.
Well, give me an example.
I remember a case
where you interviewed for culture? You can tell us something about the company and how you checked to see if the candidate was a fit.
Well, you have to spend time with your client in your client's environment, and then you have to spend time with your candidate to get to know your candidate.
On this show, I know it's your first time. Don't be vague. Don't speak in generalities. Tell us about a specific client. This is how I figured out what their culture was, and this is how I figured out what the culture of the candidate was, so I could tell if they were a match. How do you determine the culture of the company, Lee?
Great question.
Well, I think it's you really have to.
First time.
You really have to.
You don't want to
spend time inside your client's environment. You have to speak to the people that are in positions of power and are who are decision makers.
Help out, hey! Be direct. Tell me some specifics. Don't make me beg. Lee.
There's a whole variety of very intangible and abstract elements to determining what an environment is like, what it's like to be there, and all those other kinds of things, versus whether or not your candidate's going to fit into that type of environment.
Mm-hmm.
and whether or not there's an opportunity for long-term growth and stability for both parties. You know, I mean, it's really about setting up expectations and understanding.
Can you hear me, Lee? You're freaking me out. I'm asking you for specifics, and you say it's abstract. That doesn't mean anything to me. No one can walk away from this show and say, Lee told me how to figure out what the culture of the company is. Whereas at least this girl said, ask when was the last time you lost your temper. They'll get an idea. And then maybe they'll say, look, I never lose my temper. Place that at work, okay? And there's no play. If your company says the same thing, or if you're working, if your client is like Steve Jobs, you know it's not a match. Okay?
Boy, Animal, you're sure doing a great job of making sure this nice guy comes back to your show next week. Sorry, Lee.
Lee, will you come back?
No problem. It's no problem.
Am I upsetting you, Lee?
No. Go. No. You know, what kind of specifics would you like, Animal?
What do you ask? Give me one question you ask to figure out the culture.
I'll give you mine. Are you looking for a good culture? If they say yeah, I'll say great, man.
And that's just nonsense.
Lee, do you have an answer to that question, Lee? Or are you the typical person who comes to the show and says, I'm an expert and can't tell me anything? I believe you're a great recruiter, but you've never articulated it in a way you can share with other people. Have you ever mentored anybody?
Sure I have.
Okay, so tell to pretend that we're them. Say, listen, this is how you have to check to see if it's a cultural fit. I'll let you off the hook. Do you have anything else you'd like to say to us, Lee, first time on the show? Glad you spoke up. Love your last name. Candiotti? That's it.
Yeah. Okay.
What's your name on Twitter?
It's Candy Exec Search.
Candy Exec Search. Okay. Do you want to say anything else before we move on?
No.
Can we spell that?
It's CandiExecerch.
Okay.
You're not upset. Jerry's worried that you've, you know.
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
I was just making a statement that if I were him, I'd never come back. And the way you've treated him is absurd.
Okay.
Is that fair enough, Candy?
Candy. He's got a new name on the show now. Candy.
Shall we say everything is in black and white, animal?
No, that doesn't mean anything.
As much as you like to think there is, and if there's some sort of specific mathematical formula.
Right, okay?
Yeah, man, I like this guy.
Okay. Now, look, there's a company called Mighty Spring, and their goal is to provide employers and job hunters with a better way to connect than the recruiting model. And they've got lots of blog articles about how awful recruiting is. Supposedly, it's founded by a technical recruiter who knows all the ways that recruiting can go wrong. So I wrote down a bunch of the things they talked about, and I thought we might bandy them about here, okay? These guys say that the incentive plan in contingency recruiting works against the employer and the candidate. The recruiter's goal is to get some – this is what they say. The recruiter's goal is to get someone, anyone, to take a job, any job, and stick around for a minimum of 3 to 6 months. Recruiters don't even get some kind of bonus if you're getting a really great fit, so they don't have any incentive to get a great fit. Just something hired, and that's the end of it. Now, you can't stay in business if you have that attitude. That's nonsense.
It's patently false.
Yeah. Anybody else want to say anything about that? No. We got Lee. He's a good enough expert for me. And they also say that knowing you won't get paid unless you produce a hire encourages a recruiter to cheat by promising a higher salary than the company actually wants to pay. When they get you on the phone as a candidate, they make it sound better than it really is. And they misrepresent the company's hiring. I don't know what that means. Whoever's breathing into the mic or their phone, you want to stop that, okay? You're in public, okay?
Animal, anybody that uses that approach is an idiot.
Why?
Telling somebody that the salary can pay, say, $90,000, even though your client said 78 is the max, just to get them to, what, interview with you? And
interview with the company.
What an idiot.
Well, this
you're asking for trouble if you do that.
The contingency recruiters do. And, in fact, they're kind of saying contingency recruiters are forced to do it because of the way they're paid.
That is absurd.
Who said this absurdity again?
Who said this?
On Twitter, at Mighty Spring. At Mighty Spring.
That's absurd.
They're obviously misinformed. They obviously have not spent any time being an executive recruiter, whether they've been contingency or a retainer.
Pardon me?
See, the recruiter actually has to have someone thinking that the salary is a bit lower than the offer may end up being, because then you've got $3,000 or $4,000 kind of in your pocket, so to speak, that as things progress and issues come up, like there's only a 3 weeks of vacation instead of four, or the drive is a little further, or the benefits are $200 more, then you're able to cover those with what you believe is the now shrinking gap in the salary. It's a mastery of the process, and anybody that doesn't know how to do that is a failure.
Mm. Lee, you got a comment? Lee?
Yeah, well, Jerry's absolutely correct. You know, if you're if you're lying to somebody about compensation in an effort to get them to interview, there's absolutely no way in hell that even if you waste their time and your client's time spending time interviewing with each other and then finally coming to the end of the road when it's money time, and if they find out that they're $15,000 or $20,000 off on what the compensation package really is, you've done yourself a disservice as well as your client and your candidate. And especially if you're working on a contingency basis, you're going to wind up with squat and a bunch of wasted time.
You know what? There's another philosophy here that money is a bit irrelevant before they actually meet each other. If the company sees this candidate and the guy's really fantastic or the girl's really fantastic, they'll stretch. So
you know those situations do happen, and they happen all the time, and those are always possibilities. But you know what? If you aren't upfront with both your client and your candidate about that, about the financial numbers being not in alignment, and letting that process pursue itself, then again, you're wasting your time as well as your client's time and your candidate's time.
These sound to me like a list of statements from someone who doesn't know what they're doing.
The guy claims to be a recruiter.
He has been
a failing recruiter who has a hell of a time trying to get one together, and I'm sure he's got several articles of why recruiting is just sheer horror, and putting deals together is like crazy, and the problems you run into. The guy sucks.
Can I interrupt here?
Yeah.
Hi, it's Mitch.
Mitch Sullivan, you're back! Yay!
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, Mitch.
Hi, Jerry. Listen, just on this question about, you know, recruiters, and have any of you guys ever had to use a contingency recruiter as a client?
No.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, so Lee has.
Yeah.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah. So Lee, you must have seen the darker side of the contingency model. You must have seen it work against you, particularly if you've had several recruiters all competing for the job you're trying to fill. Yeah.
Certainly. But as a talent acquisition person on the hiring side, you know, it's my responsibility to screen these candidates as well to find out whether or not, you know, all the information that the recruiter is giving me is accurate, and if there's continuity between what the recruiter is telling me about the candidate is what the candidate tells me about himself. You know, that's part of my responsibility as a hiring person, okay?
But you know, if you work both agency and client side, you must be able to see the difference between using multiple contingency recruiters and one retained or exclusive recruiter. You get a better job with the latter, by and large, because it's the only way you can replicate what you would do yourself. Would you agree?
No, I don't agree, because you know, just because they're contingency recruiters doesn't mean that they're going to sell their soul and lie, cheat, and steal just in order to get you to interview somebody or hire somebody. There are plenty of really good contingency recruiters out there, as well as there are retained recruiters. And in fact, I would suggest to you that there are with regard to retained recruiters or people who do that exclusively, that many of them spend way too much time trying to coddle and appease their client to convince their client that a given candidate is right for them, rather than finding the right candidate. I'll tell you why. Because a contingency recruiter has to find the right candidate that the client is not only wants to hire, but also candidate wants that job.
Lee,
and if he doesn't do that, he doesn't make any money.
And the retained structure
makes...
Hey, look, Mitch, give me a break, will you? Just a sec. He's saying the retained structure makes the candidate too fussy. When they pay money no matter what, and part of it in advance, they want the ideal specifications. Is that what you're saying, Lee?
That's part of what I'm saying.
But that's simply not
Mitch,
true.
Why aren't you louder? Mitch, why aren't you on a louder phone?
You can't hear me, though.
I can hear you, but I have to strain.
Mitch, you're kind of muffled is what you
put
are.
Put your mouth to the receiver. There's a thing called a receiver, Mitch. Put your mouth on it, okay?
Yeah, God, is this worth it? My God, I'm even using a proper phone this time. My God.
Okay, talk to Lee. We'll all be quiet.
Lee, if you use one recruiter, that one recruiter should then go out and work all of the channels, so that what he's going to deliver you is a process that enables you, the client, to have the confidence of knowing you're probably hiring the best person currently available. When you use 5 or 6 different contingency recruiters, all each of them are doing is looking in the obvious places, submitting a candidate or two each, hoping that he or she is going to be the one. Sometimes they're replicating activity, and you have no knowledge that all of the channels have been worked.
Well, wait a minute, wait a minute.
No, I would...
Hold, I'm going to say something. First of all, what makes you believe, Mitch, that because you are a retained recruiter, that you've got some secret approach to making sure that all the channels are covered? Secondly, why do you assume that the contingency recruiter just looks in, quote, the obvious places? I'm a contingency recruiter, and I look high and low, and I don't provide any service that I wouldn't provide if I was retained or otherwise.
Yeah, but Jerry, if you know you're competing with 4 or 5 other people, how much work are you genuinely going to put in when you know statistically your chances of filling the job are, you know, 1 in 5?
Okay, Mitch, I got an answer for you.
Go ahead.
I got an answer for you. I'll tell you exactly why. Because if you're a committed career recruiter, whether you're a contingency or not, you do whatever you need to do to know everyone who's in the business that you specialize in. You do everything you need to do to learn about what they do on a daily basis. You do everything you need to do to understand who's good, who's not good, who's an empty suit and who's not. And if you don't take that kind of interest in hand, whether you're a contingency or retainer, then you're not worth your salt as a recruiter.
Okay, Lee, but if that contingency recruiter is that narrow in the area of specialization, why the hell is the client using 4 or 5 others? It just doesn't make any sense. If they're that tight in their sector,
you're the one that's bringing up. I kind of don't really care who I'm going up against.
It's just for most jobs that's simply not possible. You can't know everybody.
Well, then how is it that a retained recruiter would know everybody?
Yeah, exactly.
People data it's all out there. People are much, much easier to find than they were 10, 12, even 5, 6, 7 years ago. That, you know, it may take a little longer, but you know,
yeah.
I can access.
But Mitch, you know what? It's not about
you can access.
Mitch, it's not about having the tools about how to find the right people. That's only a very, very small part of the job, okay? The real
where you find them. But if you're retained, you're going to be better briefed and you'll have a better story. Most contingency recruiters aren't briefed that well because the expectation from the client is minimal. So they're briefed. Have a look at our website.
Well, but hold on, Mitch. Though you're making a giant leap here in that contingency recruiters just sit here and accept any and all opportunities that come on the desk. I go as a contingency recruiter. In most cases, I go directly meet with my client. I walk around the place. I talk with them. I have lunch in their cafeteria. I see what's going on. I have multiple phone calls. Constant communication. I don't see how a retained client would give me any more service than I expect as a contingency recruiter.
Absolutely.
What percentage of all the jobs you take, Joe, do you fill? 1 in 3, 1 in 4, 1 in 5, how many?
I'd say probably 1 in 3 or 4.
Okay, well, that's at the better end of the industry average. So do you invest all of that time for those 3 out of 4 jobs that you don't fill?
You take the 4 jobs and you apply the same approach as you would retain, contingency, executive, whatever, and the ones that don't go further down the line with you become the 3 out of the 4 that you don't fill. So you're going to exhaust and push forward with every contingency position as you would if you were retained anyway.
So
the 3 out of 4, the 3 that don't hire from me, They weren't in a position to hire from me to begin with. It's not that I commit 25% of my time to four different customers, irrespective of their communication, cooperation, and expectation. I'm constantly evaluating where I'm spending my time.
Okay, let me
feedback, and what's going on?
There's a question that Resume Strategy asked. And
oh, no. Is this politics?
No, her question's wrong.
Tell her Obama won and to stay out of it.
But it's going towards the right direction. It's something I wanted to say. She said, is this a UK versus US difference in contingency and retained recruiting? No.
Has nothing to do with it. Has nothing to do with it.
But there are contingency recruiters who work like Mitch is saying. And there's contingency recruiters who work like Jerry. I know that Jerry and I, if we're working on contingency searches, we work them the exact same as retained searches. And I've worked retained searches with a lot of the big firms. And yes, there's
Mitch, why do you say no?
Because he's narrow-minded. That's why he's
now. Let's let him answer. Is your name Mitch Animal?
Listen to me. You can't. It's physically impossible for you to. For you to exhaustively work a role on contingency. It just doesn't make economic sense.
If you're
going to
make $30,000 or $20,000 from a placement, you might be very exhaustive. It's a good incentive.
So what are you calling exhaustive? Let's take a live example. I mean, you always like real stories. Give me a live example of a job where there's potentially hundreds of candidates.
You've got a job in Springfield, Missouri. It's not a big place where there's tons of people for, a marketing manager, technical marketing manager, something like that, okay?
Motor design engineer.
Well, yeah, okay. So the point is, you'll look at the relevant companies in Springfield. Then you'll make a little wider circle. You'll start calling the surrounding states, people in those states. And the thing is, you've got to relocate those people. It's no fun trying to do that, but if you think it's a good job and it's a good company, you'll make those calls and you'll dig, not just on LinkedIn. You'll find the companies and you'll do phone sourcing or whatever's necessary to find who's available.
Animal, I want to know, respectfully, you know I'm a respectful person.
Very.
Respectfully, Mitch, what does the high and mighty retained recruiter do that the contingency person doesn't do?
Jay, let's not turn this into a class war, okay?
I love Mitch.
Yeah, but he's making it seem that there's this skill set and consummate exhaustive search that the retained guy does that the contingency is too half-assed to do.
Let me respond to what Animal just said. One of the things that I'm then probably not taking into account, vis-a-vis the cultural difference, is the geographical limitations that sometimes you guys are placed under. Because I don't know how big Springfield is, but what's the population of that place?
Not much.
It's small.
How many?
Maybe 100,000?
20,000? 50?
Okay, yeah, it's quite small. So how many marketing managers are likely to reside in that area that could do that job?
Yeah, not many.
5, 20?
Yeah, 10.
Sorry?
Yeah, not many.
Okay, so if you're one of, let's say, two or three recruiters that are contacted to find candidates for that marketing manager job, then each of you are effectively in a race, yeah?
No, but you're going to start off by – hold on a second. You're going to start off by finding out where are you in the search, how many people have you interviewed, have you already covered the local market, how many other agencies are beating this senseless, and you're going to make the decision, no, I don't want to do that. Now, a retained company is just supposed to say, hey, if you give me a check, I will miraculously fill this job, or are you going to turn that down?
Fair enough, Jerry. For the most part, if the company say we haven't really done anything yet, that's when you'll get going and get working, yeah?
Sure, and I'll say, I tell you what, since it is such a small marketplace, Mitch, why don't you give me a week on this, and I'm going to make sure that everyone that's qualified for this hears about it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to expect that relationship.
So effectively, you're selling an exclusivity deal. You're just not asking for money up front in order to do it. Yeah?
Either that or always working toward it by blocking out my competitors through my service.
Okay. Over here, Jerry, I live in London. You know, London is a very dense population, and so things can get a lot more complicated than that. So yeah, I take on board what you say, but I still think that client would be best served by only using you than potentially using one or two others as well. They'll just get a better quality job, and you'll take your time, and you'll brief the candidates better, and you'll be consistent in how you present the company to them, and everybody wins.
Perhaps. But see, the contingency recruiter has several options to work on at all times. I don't necessarily want to swear upon my life that I'm going to fill a job. I personally don't want to take money for a project I haven't completed. That's just me.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. Okay.
If you pay me money in advance to mow your lawn, I'm probably just going to buy a six pack and chill out. And your lawn's going to still need mowed.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, I'm gonna. This is the last show. Is this the last show?
No, it's not the last show.
It didn't really have legs at the beginning, and there was some talk about that, but it looks like we're going to be back next week.
I had technical problems.
I think you should give Jerry a bigger part. Make it the Jerry and Animal show.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Mitch.
Maybe why not the Jerry and Animal and Mitch show? And you'll call it a lousy phone every week. Okay. People have to strain to hear you.
Bye.
See
you, Mitch.
David Smook, are you still with me? Dave, are you here?
I'm here.
We're going to do the singing.
I survived.
No, it's not over yet, okay? But we're going to sing now. Okay? Does everybody know that song, Does That Make Me Crazy? We're just going to sing that part, okay, Dave? Do you have guts? Just tell me. I don't have guts, Animal. I'm chicken. I cannot sing in public. I might shrink or melt or something like that. What's the story with you?
You're a pretty good recruiter.
Tell me what it is. Are you going to have some guts, or are you going to shrink and be a nobody? What are you going to do? Look, I'm losing my voice. My voice is going downhill. I'm still willing to sing. What about you? I'm like the accountant who's speaking to you as a fellow accountant. Okay, I'm going to sing. Jerry, are you singing?
Maybe.
It's just, does that make me crazy? Those are the only lyrics. Lee, are you singing?
I'm afraid I'm not.
Kathy? Not here. Chris Fleek? Still with
me? See, this is the wrong time in the show, man.
Okay, I'm going to do it. Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy?
Yeah, great.
Yeah, probably.
This makes me crazy.
Okay, now, I just want people to know what the takeaways from this show were. Take a pack of Kleenex in the cold weather. Make sure you got one in your briefcase. No handkerchiefs.
Handkerchiefs?
Okay.
Handkerchiefs are still going, man.
They're not good. They're dirty. They're dirty. You sneeze in it, or you wipe your nose in it.
You clean them.
Yeah, at the end of the day. In the meantime, you're carrying around something not clean in your pocket. Okay, I'm not really finished with that whole thing from the Mighty Spring. I mean, we can come back to it another time. But I just want to say a few things. He says that recruiters will take advantage of the information asymmetries available. The informational asymmetries available to them. He must have been reading about, you know, the Taliban or Osama and asymmetrical warfare, because he thinks that just means that the recruiter knows, like, what the real salary is. So he can lie about it, and the candidate won't know the difference. So he can lie about the job, and that's called an informational asymmetry. So now you learned about Kleenex. You learned about informational asymmetries, and I'd just like to get one more thing on the table there before. You know, I'll leave the rest of the stuff. You know, geez, I got a lot of stuff about good and bad recruiters and all kinds of things. Just let me see if there's anything quick. Okay, here's something. A guy said, does it look bad
if the education I have on LinkedIn shows that it took 6 years to get my bachelor degree. And people were advising them just to show the graduation date. Any comments on that from anybody?
I don't even know what you're talking about now, man.
Yeah, I don't think it really matters if he has a degree, he has a degree.
Yeah, degree.
Yeah, it's, well, you figure a loser takes 6 years to get a degree, okay? Okay, so we're going to go to, are we going to Jerry's show? Yeah!
Man, what a struggle today's show was. Goodness. For Pete's sake.
Hey, Jerry, this is Lee. I was curious. What was the? I wasn't real clear about what the purpose of bringing David Smoke on was for.
As kind of a fall guy. We now blame the entire show on him.
Well, well, I mean, he sounded... He sounded fairly inexperienced. You know, I just looked up the name of his company on the web, and basically they're a software service provider. They're basically another provider of recruiting and recruitment software. And I get that this guy's big into social media, but I don't get that he knew much about recruiting, to be honest with you.
And what I found interesting, and again, he seemed like a nice guy.
Well, it would have been nice to find out more about what his company does and what its value is and what it offers and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think he missed a pretty good opportunity to tell us what Smart Recruiters is or does. But surprisingly, I have no idea what he does. But he writes career content.
Well, if you look at his profile, his LinkedIn profile. He's only been with Smart Recruiters for 6 months. He was at another place as an internet enthusiast. He was an internet enthusiast for them for another 6 months prior to that. And then he was a marketing specialist for them. And prior to that, he was an intern for them. And prior to that, he had 6 months at a newspaper in Lewistown, Maine. So, you know, And apparently he's taught. He was an economics tutor at the University of Redlands. So this guy doesn't have a whole hell of a lot of experience. I mean,
no, but I just find it interesting that I think that's a good example of people putting out so much of this job seeking and recruiting and HR employment seeking content. It's like overwhelming.
Yeah, well, you know, all that's going to wash out eventually. I mean. To be honest with you, it's kind of the wild, wild west right now in terms of how social affects recruiting and how it's useful as a tool and what's going to work and what's not going to work. And there's a lot of people that are out there, you know, scrambling to take advantage of the space because they see a lot of there's a lot of good tools that are available. And a lot of good technologies that are available for people to use. But
But it still gets down to where if you're a really qualified person in the field, you can get a job without commit your life to learning how to be a job seeker and social media brander. And
right.
It's all crap, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I could get 20 sharp IT people jobs right now. They don't need to read a book on how to get a job.
Right, and you don't need to use Twitter or...
Heck no.
And all that other not, and Facebook and everything else to help you get that job done. They can be very helpful tools, but they aren't the answer, and they certainly aren't the answer. And there's some good technologies that can be helpful, but that's not what recruiting is about. It's a much broader job. This is very helpful in the area of sourcing and networking and a few other things, but that's only part of what being a good recruiter is.
Yep. All right, well, I got an offer for a guy I got to call and make his afternoon here.
Okay.
So
what's the deal on this show? Is this show over? Is the animal show over? Or what?
Yeah, typically the callers in will all offer a scale from 1 to 100 score for the guest and then the host's execution of the show. Except we didn't really have a guest today.
Right.
Everybody knows Animal did kind of a crappy job on the whole front end. The show barely got off the ground.
Right. No, my question was this. Is there going to be another Animal recruiting show? Because it sounded like...
Yeah, every Wednesday.
Okay. So
every Wednesday.
There was a remark in recruiting blogs that this may or may not... that he's looking for different platforms and... this may or may not be the last show or something like that.
Rumors of the death of the Animal show have been greatly exaggerated.
Yes, indeed. You will catch him here next Wednesday at noon.
Okay.
Hey, man, send out a tweet and mention Animal on it so we can all make sure we're following you.
Okay, will do.
All right, everybody, I got to get back to work.
Me too.
The government wants a bunch of money from me.
Indeed.
Enjoy.
Bye.